My name is Paul slash Viv. I'm Dexter 23 Jack, and I thank you all for joining me for VG Club today. We're going to be going over Bioshock 2, but before we get into things, if you guys want to just introduce yourselves and say what your favorite genre of game is.
What if we don't want to introduce ourselves, Paul?
That is your right, and
I'm just trying to derail everything already, so.
Hey, you're not hosting for once. You can do it.
Yeah, we're not even 5 minutes in here. Like, come on, at least give us the element of suspense there.
And I guess my favorite genre is either platforming or RPGs.
So who's going next?
I am Marcus, at Kuluk on Twitter. Talking about my favorite genre. There, I was trying to hold off because I don't know if I exactly have one. Let's just say shoot 'em up. Shoot, bang, bang. FPS, TPS, whatever it happens to be. But I wouldn't say that's like the far and away my favorite genre. It's just the one I play the most.
Marcus likes to blow stuff up.
Sure does.
I'll go next. Hi, I'm Javi. You'll find me on Twitter at Javiously, the zero for the O. I also make YouTube videos on YouTube at Critbox. You can find those. My favorite genre is 3D platformers, specifically 3D ones, because 2D platformers, they're good, but don't really have a big passion for it.
I'm Chris at Korea9 on Twitter. I don't really have a favorite genre, so I play everything. A lot. I play a lot of different games. So.
And I'm Tyler at Chaos Dragon 22, Chaos with a K. I like adventure games and RPGs.
I guess that's excuse me. I'm Grace. Also, you can call me Deanna, either one. I'm Piranha Plant on Twitter. Spelled the. Screw it. I'm not even going to try to explain how it's spelled with A-N-N-A, like Anna. But anyway, my favorite, I guess, is RPGs, like any kind really, like tactical RPGs, turn based RPGs, action RPGs, like just really any kind.
Cool. And yeah, before we get into things, what's your guys' experience with the, I guess, shock games? Because there's the Bioshock games, and then they're technically a spiritual successor of the System Shock games.
I have not played either of those, but I've played all three of the Bioshock.
Yeah, I would guess that most of us haven't played System Shock, but I might be wrong.
Yeah, I've not played System Shock, but like I've been, Bioshock was actually the first. The first Bioshock was the first game that I reviewed for like a bigger game site. So I've kind of nice. been hanging around with the series for a while.
Yeah, growing up, I wasn't a I grew up in a with a Mac fanboy of a dad, so I didn't really have a PC growing up. So I've never played System Shock. I've heard nothing but good things, especially about the second one. But yeah, I didn't really pick up the Bioshock games until around like 2009 when it got released on the PS3 because it was originally a 360 PC exclusive, correct?
Yep.
Yeah. And then I didn't really touch Infinite. At first it got nothing but glowing reviews, but it feels like it hasn't aged all that well, unfortunately.
Yeah, go ahead.
My history with Bioshock is I played about 70% of Bioshock 1 on a rental, dropped the series until Bioshock Infinite, played through all of that, then went back and played Bioshock 1 years later. Wasn't even the re-release, it was just decided to finish it at some point. And that was my only exposure to it all.
Yeah, I think it's interesting looking at the history of how these games have been received. Because to me, like, I remember vividly BioShock 1 coming out, and it felt like a watershed moment in just gaming for the time. Like, everybody was just losing their minds about this BioShock. And I had to play it on PC, and I'm not much of a PC guy, but, you know, and I enjoyed it, but I wasn't, like, enamored with it. But I when that happens, I don't really want to, like, go, no, this isn't as good as everybody's saying. I usually just go, okay, maybe it's just not for me, and it meant a lot to other people. And then, so BioShock never was that important to me, but my wife loves BioShock, and then she specifically was enthusiastic about BioShock 2, so that's when I first played BioShock 2, was years and years later. That was around the time that Infinite was about to come out. And then we played Infinite, and we were both kind of lukewarm on it, despite everybody else really liking it at the time. And it seems like everybody's kind of caught up to where we were. But yeah, that's my history.
And then, Grace, you were saying something?
I don't remember exactly what it was, but, like, anyway, the first game I played it on when it came out on PS3, like somebody else said, and I did really like it, and I bought 2 when it came out, but I never finished it at that point. Same with Infinite. Like, I bought it on PC at some point and played like an hour or two maybe and never went back to it. And I finally finished 2 and Infinite when they released, like, the collection on, like, PS4, Xbox One, all that. I finally played, I replayed 1 and I played 2 and Infinite on PS4. And then just for our podcast here, I replayed 2 on PS4.
I actually only ever played Infinite, so kind of interesting going backwards, although I haven't touched BioShock at all. So
you're just playing them, like, you started out with Infinite, and then you played 2, and then in 10 years you'll play BioShock 1?
Probably. That sounds about right.
Cool. It might be the best way to play. I mean, none of us know.
Right. Yeah, so,
like, I played Infinite at launch, so it was, that's where I... And I liked it, but it's going, looking back in memories, it definitely hasn't aged well.
Yeah, but I mean, you're playing it in chronological order because Infinite takes place like in 1914 or something like that.
Yeah, it's around there.
Yeah, but yeah, so just in general, I mean, Javi already said he feels like this game is severely underrated, but what were your thoughts on the game?
I think BioShock 2 had a lot going against it. It was not made by the original team. I'm not even sure if they got endorsed by the original team.
No,
maybe
the original team, like, kind of disowned the fact that BioShock 2 existed.
Okay, so it's like an Arkham Origins. You won't be included. I was surprised that it was included in the BioShock trilogy, but yeah. So yeah, and you know, just generally when it came out, I remember the reviews being, you know, not as good as the first games, and like the general consensus felt like, yeah, it's not that good. It doesn't live up to, you know, the huge first game. So that sentiment, you know, I never touched BioShock 2 until, you know, I played it with my wife, and I was surprised, but like it's really solid. And also the story that it's trying to tell is pretty creative given the limitations of, like, you're still in Rapture. It's kind of like locked in, like the state that it's in at the end of the first game. So they got really creative with what they could do. I think that it's a hard sell up front that you're playing as a big daddy. Like, I remember hearing that, and that wasn't appealing. You know, it's like if they said in the next Resident Evil, you're going to be Nemesis. It's like, well, that's not what people want, right?
We want to be scared by Nemesis.
Right. But I think they, you know, they use that as a really great way to put you in environments and in situations that you couldn't have been in otherwise. Especially like near the end where, I don't know if we're talking spoilers yet. Well, I guess, are we worried about spoilers?
No, not really. I mean, if anybody's listening to this and hasn't played Bioshock 2, you've been warned, and you've got 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. This is your warning. All right, go ahead, Avi.
Sure. Yeah, at the end, like, when they let you see the world through the eyes of a little sister and, like, seeing, like, all these gruesome places all polished up and everything. When they call people angels when they're dead, it's because they look like angels and all that stuff. I thought that was such a clever thing to do.
That's my favorite part of two.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, wow, yeah. Like this is why, like this is how they kind of perceive everything. And it's this nice, it is that utopia that, you know, the game is kind of saying, like, this is where you're going. Rapture is this nice utopia. Except you get there and it's a shithole.
Right.
Yeah. And then also having Lamb be such a foil to Andrew Ryan's ideology. Like, the whole first game is just this, like, critique of, you know, extreme libertarianism. And then taking this and going, well, what is a perverted version of the antithesis of that look like? And
yeah, the first one is crazy libertarianism. And this is like, what if socialism was really, really bad too?
Yeah,
is it more socialism or communism? Because they describe her as a collectivist, correct?
Right. Yeah, I would say that's more accurate because, like, it's less of a group. It's more like a person saying, you know, the needs of the many. But like, she has no problem with disposing of individuals if necessary. Yeah, it's kind of more authoritarian.
Which we've seen historically, like people that start socialist or communist groups, like they start out with the best intentions, but sometimes they end up going largely astray. Like, you know, when you know, in the early 1900s, when the Bolshevik Revolution, like that started out with good intentions, but you know, maybe didn't end up in the right spot. So I think that's kind of like what they were kind of critiquing here is like, what's the exact opposite of, you know, Ayn Rand's shitty worldview?
Yeah, and I guess I didn't pay attention to this as much the first time, but it's also been nearly a decade since I last even touched the Bioshock series. But do you feel like Andrew Ryan is kind of like an analog for like, you know, Walt Disney, Ford, that sort of stuff?
They personify him in that way. The being like this big statue is like how there is one of Walt Disney with Mickey Mouse. They do want to personify him as a Walt Disney, like come to Rapture, it's amazing here. Come to Walt Disney World.
Yeah, and in Bioshock 2, they have that whole museum area where it feels like a Disney park where it's like, telling you the history of Andrew Ryan and his conquest to make Rapture and all that. So, yeah, I don't think that's unintentional.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, that museum part in particular, like, I kind of wanted to stick around and kind of listen to the animatronics a bit more, but I don't know if anybody else got this, but I was having trouble with the subtitles on some of those, so I felt like I couldn't pay attention as much, but
I didn't have that issue. I did run into some other like weird buggy issues we can get into later, but
yeah, me too.
A couple nothing with that.
Yeah, and but, in that section I had my headset on, so I wasn't even looking at subtitles. But I was doing exactly the same thing you were talking about. I was just like, "Yep, let me send it this exhibit. Hear what's going on here, shoot some people in between the next one." It's something though.
What
that
version
wonder...
did everybody play?
Oh, Series X, or I guess that would be the Xbox One X version. I don't know when this game came out.
I think you played the remaster version, Marcus. It's probably the same one I played.
Okay.
Yeah, the remaster on from PS4 on PS5 for me.
Same
thing.
Yeah, I got it off of PlayStation Plus, so I was playing it on the PS4.
Yeah. Actually tried to play it on PC, but it crashed on me after like 2 hours. So I just went to PS4 instead. Uh-huh. That also crashed on me a couple of times.
Sucks.
So, like, going back kind of to what Javi said, you know, earlier about, you know, was this even endorsed by the original creators? Just like full disclosure, I played through the original BioShock remastered as well as this, and they've added so much more into that remaster. Like there are documentary clips you can find in the world now, that like explore like the making of it with Ken Levine, and they don't have any of that in the remaster of 2. So it's like kind of like we're gonna include it because it fleshes out the trilogy, but.
Did you touch the Big Daddy Trial DLC?
God.
No.
No.
I hated protecting the little sisters, so.
Yeah.
No. I completely understand. Yeah, when I was playing Minerva's Den, it was just like, hey, if you play this, you get a special upgrade. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll touch it a bit. And basically by doing that, you unlock extras like original artwork, original trailers, recordings, that sort of stuff. I don't know if that was in the original DLC, but it does have some element of that there.
Yeah, like it's right up in front in the BioShock remaster. Like there's... it's just out in the world. Like you find these reels. It's just a collectible in the world now, as opposed to like having, I guess, to play some obscure DLC that evidently most of us ignored completely.
Yeah. I started Minerva's Den and I'm like, I don't know if I need to finish this, but just out of curiosity, I looked up the story just to get an idea of what it is.
Yeah. I mean, going into this Minerva's Den, I thought that was going to be like the main draw, and I ended up enjoying the actual game more than Minerva's Den itself. I mean, good story and all, but I felt like team behind that explored AI a bit deeper with Tacoma.
Right.
Oh, is that the same team?
Yeah.
Yeah. So cool. Gone Home, Tacoma, and BioShock Minerva's Den.
Oh, wow.
That makes sense. I think I enjoyed Minerva's Den more than BioShock 2, and I owe that like all the way to the length. I felt like it was the perfect length for the kind of gameplay we got out of BioShock 2, because you're sort of doing the same things, but you don't repeat yourself so much.
Yeah, that, you brought this up earlier that you didn't like protecting the the little sisters. Which I did not either. It's like kind of to me, it was like I don't want to do this. Like
I stopped after like the third one.
Yeah. Like you do a little bit and it's like, do I need to do this? Like,
yeah, it's just so obnoxious.
But yeah, like Minerva's Den being like shorter and like being able, you can get through that in what, like 3-4 hours. So.
Although, like, the main campaign of BioShock 2 is only around 10 hours. So it's, like, a good length for, I don't know, that's the kind of length that I prefer single-player games to be in general.
Yep.
I guess it depends, but also, like, this time around, I really wanted to play differently than I did the first time or than I typically play. Usually when I play BioShock, you know, I either use the ice plasmid or electric plasmid and then just a gun, and I always go the save everybody good guy route. This time I made it a point to be like as evil as humanly possible, always make the worst choices, and then try out plasmids that I usually don't, like the bees and the mind control and stuff like that. It was interesting.
How does that affect the... my understanding is like that affects your daughter, the she eventually becomes the big sister. How does that play out? Cause I can't hurt the little girls. So
sure. Yeah. Well, lucky for me, you don't have to protect a little sister after that first one, that first tutorial one where you have to protect her. You never have to do that again. And then the big sisters come in at the end of each level, or after you've harvested all the girls in an area, you have to fight the big sister, but there's none of those, like, get ready, here come a bunch of enemies. I remember that vividly from my first time playing through this, of like, oh my gosh, I got so tired of like setting up traps and all that. So it was nice to like actually play through the game and basically never have to do that, only a couple times.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe you can speak a bit more to this, Javi, since you've played it numerous times before, but I think there's actually 8 different endings. Some of them are like just like weather variations, but like basically you've got 3 outcomes. If you go the bad guy route, basically she learns from you and she implements you and as part of her consciousness, and she's like, I'm gonna become a supervillain, correct?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, she's like, everything that you've done, she's like, oh, that's how I should behave, and then she turns on you at the end and takes your atom, which I thought was great. I wanted her to do that. It made sense.
So proud of her.
Yeah.
Does she always take your consciousness in every ending?
So that's in one of the endings. Like, if you did a mixture of saving and harvesting, you can be like, no, I don't want you to take my consciousness. I just want to die. Or you can let her do it.
Yeah, because I saved all the little sisters, and she takes the consciousness, and I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, just like at the very end, I was confused for a second because Lamb had set up all the bombs, and I was just like, am I just dead now? How did she get out of? Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
And then for a second, I was like, wait, is the entire city of Rapture falling into this crevice, or is it just the prison at the end?
Yeah, and I don't know if it was a graphical glitch for me or not, but like when you first get down to that area, the prison or whatever, and you're walking through the glass hallways and you can see the crevice down below, was it like glowing white, like super bright white, or was that a graphical glitch? I was like, why is it glowing like that? What would possibly be doing that?
There was something I saw somewhere, I don't know if it was an audio log or something, but it was like there's like sea slugs down there that are infused with Adam, and they like make it glow or whatever. I think it's supposed to do that.
Oh, weird. Okay, cool.
I obviously didn't even notice, but I do remember seeing somewhere that it's sea slugs.
Well, yeah, there, you can collect sea slugs when you're out on the floor, the ocean floor, and they give you a little bit of Adam. They're like hidden in little nooks and crannies.
Yeah, so I guess it's supposed to be like a ton of those, or like, I guess some really big ones. I don't know if it's very specific, but...
I felt like there was at least one in every underwater section, but...
I didn't find any.
It's usually 3, I think. I was really compulsive with getting all of those.
Just gonna make sure you extinguish all the sea slugs.
Yeah, I mean, it was more so just like, I know there's going to be an achievement linked to getting all these. There wasn't, by the way, but I always just hope I do the easy achievements in games when I play through them.
No, I understand that. They were a lot easier to find in with Sigma and Minerva's den, because they would just be in random like jars, so you'd just like crack one open and you'd be like, okay, cool.
I will say that the gunplay doesn't, like, I had always heard people, and I think Chris, you might have tweeted something about this, about like the gunplay in Bioshock just being really bad, and I had always understood that people said stuff like that, but I never really thought about it or felt it really until this time, where I'm like, man, I'm like loading these people with shotgun blasts and this machine gun, and they do not react until they die. You know, they're just running around going through their animations, and it's like, I feel like I don't have a lot of power with these guns. You're just like chipping away at a health bar.
See, I felt that way with the drill in particular. I know it kind of like stuns the enemies, and that's supposed to be the main draw, but I was just like, I feel like this should be doing a lot more damage than it actually is.
Yeah, totally, especially because how little gas you get.
And I think that for me is why, like, I like Bioshock 2. I just don't like it as much as the original. And it's because, like, Bioshock 2, like, takes And as you said, Javi, you only have to do it once, but it's a lot of these, like, it's a lot of these combat encounters where it's like set up traps and you have to rely on gunplay, and I don't find that fun here. Like, the atmosphere is still great. It's just the shooting is so mediocre.
Yeah, the game, like, you're getting close to the end of the game. Okay, we're just gonna throw like every single like in waves over and over.
That seems to be like anywhere you go is like, this is how we're gonna end this area, is just throw a bunch of enemies at you and you're gonna expend all your ammo and use all your Eve. And BioShock 2, like, at least with my recent replays of both, you get less, like, you get less health kits, you get less Eve, the Eve injections. Like, you can upgrade them, but only to, like, a certain extent, where I think I had, like, 10 in the original BioShock, and I think I got up to 6, maybe, in this one. So it's like, I always felt like I was, it's almost more of a survival horror game, because you're almost always out of ammo and stuff to fire at, and I think it's harder than the original too.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, too. I was gonna ask, what difficulty did you guys play this on?
I just did normal.
I did normal too.
I boosted it down to easy at some point because I was just like, I just want to get through it. Like, I really like, I'm here for the story. Like, I know I don't love the gameplay of it, so I just kind of want to re-experience the story.
Fair enough. I went with normal too, and I kept the what is it, the I want to call it the Vita chamber, the respawn chamber. I kept those things on.
You can. Oh, I didn't know you could turn them off.
Yeah.
There's a trophy. Yeah, there's a trophy for that, and that was a huge thing with the original too. It was just like, hey, if you want this trophy, you have to turn it off. And I kept running my head into a wall with the original until I was like, you know what, I'm not gonna try this anymore.
I mean, I got a similar achievement to that. I don't know if there's two separate ones, because the one I got was just like, don't die.
Yeah.
But I didn't know you could manually like turn off that. Is it in game or is it just like a menu thing you did?
It's a setting thing. Like, you can go into settings and be like, hey, I want to turn off the Vita chambers, so when you die it just goes to your last saved game. And since you can save anywhere, you know, it was one of those things where if you pay attention to that, it's very manageable.
Oh yeah, I
scummed. That's funny. For sure. Yeah, it's funny. I watched a bunch of lore videos about this game after finishing it. And the idea of turning off the Vita chamber is like antithetical to the canon of how this actually worked. Cause like at the beginning of the game, you shoot yourself in the head. Right. And canonically what happened is the little sister that's linked to you, put your DNA or your information into the Vita chamber so it would respawn you. So to turn those off doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, that was a thing with the original. I mean, like, I forget the exact terminology when the gameplay doesn't match the narrative. There's a specific term for it.
Narrative dissonance.
Yeah. And basically with that, I would always be like, okay, so I get these Vita chambers, but, wouldn't that mean that other citizens of Rapture could use that as well? And I was wondering if it was like a VIP system, like it costs a lot of money to get respawn in those. So that's why in the original, your Andrew Ryan's son, which was a plot point I completely forgot about. But I was thinking like, oh, maybe because you've got that unique prestige, you get unlimited uses or something like that. Or maybe her name was Emily, right? The little sister that became the big sister?
Eleanor.
Okay.
Yeah. Dope. Wait, is it,
yeah,
is it Eleanor, or is that Eleanor is BioShock Infinite?
Maybe both.
Is it both?
Oh, no.
Eleanor is BioShock 2.
Let's see. It was...
Infinite is Elizabeth, BioShock 2.
Oh, Elizabeth, yes. Yeah,
okay.
E name.
I was thinking The Last of Us 2. I was like, I'm getting my names confused. But Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I was thinking maybe she hacked the system and that's why it took so long. Because, I mean, like, between the opening scene and when you get thrown back into the world, it's like a period of 10 years, right?
Yeah.
And I guess I just didn't realize that Rapture was on the decline for that long. I figured it was like, oh, you know, this thing happened like 6 months ago, a year ago. It feels like just this like dystopian thing has been going on for like the past decade. And after a point, I'm just like, oh, wow, how are you guys even still alive with all the leaks and everything happening?
Right. It's funny that you see leaks everywhere, but the water's never rising, really. And yeah, like I thought it was cool, though, that in like the opening cutscene, seeing Rapture when it's actually like you see the, what are they called? The people that are addicted to
splicers.
Splicers, right. You see there's a couple splicers in those dark areas and they were harassing that little sister. But like to get there, you're walking through like a ball, like people are all dressed nicely and everything's lit well. It's like, oh, okay, this is Rapture before. But you can see that there are splicers, so it is about to fall. So it's cool to get like a sense of that.
Oh, very, very much so. And then I believe this is the case, but Sophia Lam, she was somebody who was introduced in just this game, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because I think the lore reason was they had her detained in the don't want to call it a concentration. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, the lore video that I saw for this was talking about how Andrew Ryan like caught her like doing like a shelter, like a food shelter, or basically doing something to help people. And he's like, not on my watch. And so he like found he hired some private investigator to find some dirt to justify locking her up. So she was locked up for a few years. And then I think once Bioshock 1 happened and Andrew Ryan was killed, she started taking over.
It's funny because you say that you were like, I wonder if it's this, the Vita Chambers is this thing that you have to have prestige. And that could be, right? Because like Andrew Ryan would have control. He would let the rich people buy into that if something happened there. And then Sophia Lam, with her crazy like side, she would like have dictatorship over who could get it on her side as well. So
yeah, but also the enemies respawn, so who knows, maybe like canonically some of the enemies use it as well. I guess that's just never really touched on too much, except for when it was just like, oh yeah, that's how I brought you back from the dead.
It's a neat little touch.
And so yeah, about the enemies respawning, I have a question for you, Chris, since you just played Bioshock 1. Did that happen there too? I don't remember that being so frequent.
I didn't, like, you would go into some areas and there would be, like, another splicer, but I don't know if it's necessarily they were respawning or, like, they roam through the area, so I don't know if it's so much like, oh, you came back into this room and then they're back.
I don't remember in Bioshock, in my playthrough, seeing necessarily respawning, or at least not that I noticed. Like, I would often be finishing up a level, and then it's like, by the way, there's some little sisters you haven't accounted for. If you leave, it's going to be really hard. And I'm like, shit. So I double back, and like every time I had to double back, I don't remember rooms repopulating with enemies.
No, like, I mean, until you get to like that big daddy, right? And then it's like, there's
oh, sure. There's somebody, but those were areas that. Those were areas that usually I had missed, right?
Yeah, or the big daddy is like roaming somewhere and you're not in that area at the same time. So
sure,
I think it might just be like, I didn't remember seeing it. Like, there were definitely splicers still around when I was playing Bioshock 1, but could just be I didn't clear out the entire area. It wasn't quite as bad as it was here.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm back, and why am I playing an old school action game where I go into one room and come back and they're back again?
Yeah, it was like one of those things where I'd be like, I'm gonna double back and get that first aid pack that I couldn't pick up because I was full a second ago, and then I'd double back and it'd be like, oh great, new enemies.
How are there so many? How are they all still alive? Like, there are more enemies in Bioshock 2 than I think there were in Bioshock 1.
Don't doubt the power of communism. No, but yeah, that, after a while, that kind of got on my nerve, and I was just like, okay, maybe they're just throwing enemies at us so that, like, if you get stuck, you can be like, okay, I can farm enemies for money, and then I can use the money to buy stuff to get back on my feet. That was the only reason I could think of for why the enemies kept respawning.
Honestly, to me, it just felt like they were just like, it was just giving you something to do. Like, it was just like out of obligation, because, like, I would, like, clear out a room, turn my back, and then one would attack me from behind. It's like, there's, like, nobody here 2 seconds ago. It's like, they're just, like, spawning just so you have something to do besides just walk around.
And that's a shame, because that's, like, kind of the most fun I had in the game, is just exploring,
right,
like, the cool areas they've created.
Yeah, all the areas are really neat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, sorry, I didn't really like that. Like, I would rather walk around and, like, take in, you know, the atmosphere than, like, oh, you know, then there's nothing happening, so here's 3 enemies that we just pulled out of thin air.
Yeah, maybe if they had, like, you know, you activated a switch in every area or something, and then it's like, oh, here they all come. Especially, like, the little sister's attack, but you beforehand, you'd be able to explore the areas before you touched anything.
It's kind of a shame that these are first-person shooters, first and foremost, because Rapture is such a rich world that, like, I could see a detective kind of game, or, like, a different genre might be better suited, like, get the most out of that world. But, yeah, I do think that, like, environmentally, there's some, like, really wonderful moments for, like, you're seeing a big daddy on the other side of some glass. Like, the first one you see is, like, fixing the leak, and that actually addresses one of what we were talking about, where, like, we see leaks everywhere. How is this place not finished? And it's like, well, big daddies are going around being maintenance men, right? Fixing stuff. So that's kind of a cool lore thing. But yeah, like, just the stuff that you notice, like, going on that you may or may not notice. It's like going through windows, you'll see some big daddies walking around. You'll see some, like, little vignettes of what's going on around Rapture that I thought was really neat.
Javi, did you play Burial at Sea, that DLC for Infinite?
I did not, but I did see a bunch of clips from it in the videos I was watching, where they, like, went back to Rapture.
A detective in Rapture's like, isn't that what that DLC is?
Or
is,
oh, really? That?
Basically,
that's cool.
I mean, it's still a first-person shooter, but, like, they kind of play around with it, like, actually doing some sort of investigation.
Cool.
But yeah, I mean, like, just in terms of gameplay, did you guys like the plasmids this time around? I can't recall if they're pretty much the same ones that were used in the original, were they, Chris?
There were some new ones. I still mostly used, like, the electro shock and the flame one. Like, they were my favorite in the original, and I still liked playing with them here. I wasn't like Javi, where I was like, I'm going to play this different this time. So,
you're right, too, though. Those are the most useful plasmids, like, easily. Like, it was kind of a pain in the ass using anything else.
I don't know. Decoy was pretty useful, especially when you had to take down, like, hordes of enemies. I would just, like, set aside the decoy, and they would just attack that. It's like the decoy gun in the Ratchet and Clank games. Just let that take up. So let them focus on that, and then I could actually focus on unloading an entire clip into one of these enemies, especially the what are they called? The Bruisers, the big Dr. Yeah. Hyde, or
there were different types of big daddies in this one, which was interesting, because they have different, like, they're all kind of look the same, but they have different weapons and different attack patterns and
mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was a thing that, like, at first glance, when I first saw, when this game was, like, ramping up to come out and stuff, and I was like, first of all, I don't like that you're a big daddy. Second of all, I hate the design of the Big Daddy that you are. You know, people joke that he looks like Bomberman because he has the two vertical like slits where the eyes are. But it's like, if you're going to have us be a Big Daddy, why wouldn't we be the iconic, you know, like diving suit with the, you know, all the different bulbs on the front?
Like, Mr. Bubbles.
Mr. Bubbles. yeah, I don't know. Like, I think that the Alpha series is kind of stupid looking, but some of the other ones were really neat.
I'd say from a lore perspective, it makes sense. It's like, oh, we'll just put a guy in a diving suit and mess with his brain.
Yeah.
But then as they got more advanced, they got better and better.
And the story of your character, what was it, his nickname when he came? Johnny Surface or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the story of your guy who was literally just deep sea diving and accidentally found Rapture, and then they captured him. That's a really cool premise. And just the fact, I think that from what I was watching, they said that like Andrew Ryan saw him as a threat and thought that he was super paranoid, so he thought that he was like a spy or someone sent from above to tear down Rapture. So they locked him up and eventually decided to experiment on their prisoners, and that's, he was like one of the first, the Alpha series Big Daddies. So I think that that whole story is really cool.
How shitty is your security though, that like some random diver just like swims up on your underwater utopia?
Yeah, I guess you just don't expect anybody to go that far, that deep. And then like once somebody notices the city, I don't know if he broke in or they were like, what the hell is that? Is that a guy? Let's get him, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess with Rapture, I always assumed it was like in the middle of the Atlantic, whereas they made it seem like if somebody was using a diving suit, they made it seem like, oh, this was just off the coast of Georgia or something.
You know, it was actually in one of the lore videos that I saw. There are coordinates in the first game that suggest that Rapture is in between Iceland and something else, but like, it's not that far away from land. It's not in the middle of the Atlantic,
which would make some sense. Like, you know, you'd have to get all the stuff out there. They would have to have built it in like the 1930s, 1940s. Like the infrastructure just wouldn't have been there to build in the middle of the ocean. Also, you can't go that far down without crushing yourself. So,
there's also the thing like, in the few glimpses of the surface you get, like at the beginning of Bioshock and the ending of Bioshock 2, like you see that lighthouse kind of shape thing sticking out of the water, like somebody like out in the ocean, if they were just like going to go dive, like, okay, I'll use this as a marker, like, you know, so I kind of knew like where I am, and then they drop anchor right there, like what's going to happen, you know?
Right.
So just a lore question. It was something from the original that I don't know if it addressed, but like in the original, when the main character like crashes in the plane and comes across the entrance to Bioshock, was the plane crash like scripted by Atlas, or was that actually just like a freak accident?
No, it's all staged. Like that's, it's designed, like you are designed to come back. They killed innocent people to do it, but it was set up for your character to be there at that time and take down Andrew Ryan. So
let's not worry about how they knew you would survive the plane crash and be the sole survivor.
Logic.
Yeah. I'm sure he'll be fine.
And that Atlas you wouldn't just
like you wouldn't just continue to tread water out there. Instead, you would swim to this weird lighthouse and then take a weird elevator. Where does this go?
And then I think the only returning character, I mean, like you get Fontaine/Atlas audio logs along with Andrew Ryan, but I think the only returning live character was the founder of the kind of little sister and Big Daddy program. It was the Russian Eastern European lady.
Tannenbaum.
Yes. And she kind of disappeared after that introduction level, and I was just like, where did she go? And they kind of addressed that with the with Minerva's Den, which I was kind of glad they went back to that. But I was just like, wait, you're leaving me with Mini Atlas, essentially the Sinclair.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept waiting for that guy to betray me, and I was actually surprised at the end when he turned out to be surprisingly loyal. I was like, oh shit, huh?
You know, it's funny. It's like a couple. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I'm just saying that it didn't like make sense from a narrative perspective. Like, oh, this guy's just a good dude in Rapture. I don't think that's realistic.
Yeah. Who says "would you kindly"? Right. Do any of you guys watch Star Trek: Deep Space Nine?
I've seen it.
I've heard nothing but good things, but no, I haven't watched it.
All of you should, because it's fantastic. But okay, this fun fact will not be as interesting. But Andrew Ryan is voiced by one of the main characters in that show. And weeks before playing this game, me and my wife have an exchange of like, I'm nominating this game for you to beat, and then they nominate a game for me to beat, and then go back and forth. So I had just played through Fallout New Vegas, which aesthetically shared so much with BioShock. Like, even just the music during the load screens is super similar. Just the era that they're trying to evoke. But anyways, yeah, and Fallout New Vegas had another Deep Space Nine cast member as one of the main villains too. So,
what was it, Mr. House? Is that who you're referring to?
I believe so. That's the guy that his mind is in the computer, right?
Yeah, he's the one that shows up on the television screens in the strip. Yeah,
he's the hero, right. Sir. I don't know if you're should be calling him a villain. Everybody,
oh, I killed the hell out of that guy.
Well, I don't know if you played the. Played the Game of the Year edition, but there's actually a skill achievement for killing Mr. House with a golf club. I think it was something like, oh, "Would you kindly?"
Oh, that's so cool! Wow. Oh, and actually, yeah, it's funny. The voice actor who plays Mr. House and the voice actor who plays Andrew Ryan in Deep Space Nine, they're like rivals. They're like, you know, really close friends who hate each other. So that's kind of fun that they're connected that way.
Oh no, indubitably. But yeah, God, with New Vegas, I could talk about that for days. But like the music in that game is entire like missions are named after like song titles. So I don't think BioShock is as invested, but yeah, I definitely got that comparison when I, especially during the loading screens, which fortunately wasn't too many. I was actually kind of impressed by that. I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah, and they're pretty quick, too. Yeah. Like, before you know it, it's like, press X to continue. I'm like, oh, we just got here. I thought I had a minute to check Twitter.
But yeah, I'm curious. What did you guys do in terms of the? We talked about the little sisters. What we did with those, but like the three kind of lieutenants of Sophia. The two lieutenants and Stanley Pohl. What did you guys do with them?
I didn't kill anybody.
I didn't kill anyone either.
I didn't kill Grace or Stanley. I killed Gil, just because like that was his whole thing, was like, this is my final wish, you know, destroy whatever I become. Like, I just like, okay, you know, if you say so.
Yeah, no, I was kind of following his last wish, and then like when he was begging for his life, it's like, I'll go outside and I'll live peacefully. And I didn't actually get a clear picture of Gil. I kind of just imagined him as like a giant what's that game on the Dreamcast? Seaman?
Oh, yeah.
Just a giant Seaman. And I was just like, yeah, I'm not going to let you go out into the world and potentially steal girls so you can get more Adam. Yeah, I think I'm just gonna go ahead and pull the switch on you.
But I mean, now we know that at the bottom of that trench is all those sea slugs. He can just go eat them. He'll be fine.
One thing I thought was weird was, like, if you spare Grace, she's like, she thanks you and, like, says, oh, I was wrong about you, and, like, she starts helping you a little bit. Then, like, if you spare Stanley, there's just, like, absolutely zero acknowledgement whatsoever. He just stays there. You never hear from him again. It's so weird.
Yeah, with Stanley, I was just kind of, I was like, you know what? I've killed so many people. I actually feel really bad. I've even felt bad about killing the big daddies this time around, because it's just like, oh, God, they're just doing their job. Fuck. But
scorched earth, kill them all.
That's kind of the thing, like what we were talking about earlier. Like, now you're a big daddy, like, okay, but I don't really feel like any more powerful.
Right. Like, yeah, totally.
You are heavy as all hell, though. So sometimes I would jump and forget my character's weight, and then I'd freak out because I thought there was an enemy behind me or something.
How do you spare Stanley? So when I encountered him, my robot or my brain controlled dude just went up and started fighting him immediately. So I didn't really get that chance to make that decision.
It was as simple as just going to the train and hitting the leave the area button.
Oh, you know what? No, Stanley, I meant to kill. So you're talking about Stanley and then the guy in the tank?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought there was another person who we were sort of told, like, oh, yeah, you have the option of killing him, but then now you just find him and you fight.
It was the older black lady, the singer.
Oh, no, her. I definitely spared, because, yeah, she was just talking mad shit to you when you find her, and then it's like, I could kill you, but you really haven't done anything to me, so I just left her.
Are you talking about Sinclair, whose lamb turns into
so you have to kill Sinclair?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
He asked you to kill him too, so I can understand why you would get confused there, but...
Yeah, because I guess, like, part of the transition to being a big daddy is you kind of lose control over your mind. Like, you're the only one that kind of still has consciousness and is able to do what you want. So Sinclair was fighting it, but eventually it would have overtaken him and he would have just been another mindless drone.
Yeah, and I think there was a audio diary where it was just like, earlier on, we didn't have an attachment to the little sisters, and yeah, the big daddies would just be like, I'm immortal, and just basically run off on the seafloor sort of thing. So they're like, we need to have a way to leash them. No, it's just...
I'm just imagining, like, dudes in giant diving suits just running them, hitting a trench and falling. Forever.
And then walking up on the beach like what is it, Senator Kelly in X-Men, just like,
oh, right? Yeah, totally.
But yeah, I'm I guess this is also something I didn't really note as much the first time, but like, how do you think the game like handles the talk of like addiction? Because I'm just like, okay, these guys are addicted to Adam. That makes sense. But then I'm reading the description and it's like, splicers are people who've lost their humanity because they've become addicted. It's just like, oh
jeez. Yeah. I mean, I think that most, if not all, games from that era, like, weren't too sensitive about things, and not that intelligent about some of the subjects they handled. So yeah, I mean, that sounds pretty rough.
You had too much Adam. You're a splicer.
One thing I
can't believe. You're the good guy because you use the right amount of drugs.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a missed opportunity, right? Because you could have. They could have really played up that it's a tragedy what happened to Rapture. It's a tragedy what happened to these people. I think that would have been more interesting.
Yeah, and I feel like, Yeah, they never really touch on it because they're just like, yeah, most of the city was just a bunch of assholes. I'm surprised this place didn't blow up sooner.
Right. Is more interested in like, isn't this spooky? Which I like. That's cool, but yeah.
God, what was it? I sometimes would be surprised that like Sophia Lam would order the big sisters to like flood an area. I'm like, there's a little sister in here. Ah, god damn. Save the little sister, you asshole. I mean, the big sisters are supposed to be like little sisters who've grown up, and I guess maybe they touched upon this in one of your lore videos, Javi, but I guess like once they reach a certain age, they can't produce Adam anymore. Is that essentially what it is?
Man, you know, I don't know. I will say that the big sister is such a great idea, and the design rules. I love how they look. I think, and all the credit in the world to the team that made BioShock 2, because I think that's an appropriate addition to this universe, and I think it's great.
Oh, very much so. They looked, I mean, like, I was generally terrified by them. I mean, they were easy enough to take down, but just, like, the shrieking and being like, it's coming, and me, like, preparing in a corner with some traps, just being like, okay. Come and get it, you bastard.
Throw down some mini turrets.
Yeah, no, turrets were my best friend. Ooh. Especially since I decided to do all the little sister stuff. I was just like, great, I can throw two of these out in both directions and shoot at enemies from a corner. So I'm going to just keep doing that.
Going back to Chris mentioned the glitches that he experienced. I had one, like I was fighting a big sister and the music's going crazy. Like the music in this game when there's like intense combat is so loud and like, I don't know, it's just trying to like emphasize how intense the combat is. So I'm fighting this big sister and I walk up to it with a drill and I just do the melee strike, the like bam, and it just blinks out of existence. It's just gone, and the music's still going, and I can't find her anywhere. She just doesn't come back. And basically, that music played until I finished the level. I think I was halfway through the level, but I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, I thought I was gonna have to redo that final like horde battle that you do right before you go up to the surface. Because mm-hmm. I lost complete control over being able to change weapons or plasmids.
Oh man.
So eventually I ran out of ammo in the weapon I had. Fortunately, the Eve was not dropping, so I was able to continue to burn people to death as I'm running around. But like, it was, oh wow. It was like, I don't remember that from the original. I don't remember having trouble with that fight in the original. And hit a bug like that and it can really like damper your enjoyment of a game.
It's like, yeah, totally.
This sucks.
I got fairly lucky, and I mean like Grace, you're talking about how like did something similar happen to you like 2 hours into the PC version?
Yeah, it just like it crashed to the desktop on the PC version and I just like stopped there. I was like, okay, I'm gonna play on console. And then, like, the very first time I started up the PS4 version, it crashed when it was on the 2K logo. I was like, no, good.
But so many 2K, so many 2K logos, by the way. It's like four, right? 2K studios located. So it's just like every time I would start it up and it would flash to those logos, I'd be like, okay, come on. I know it's 2K Martin, 2K Australia, 2K China, and 2K something.
Right. Yeah, it crashed one time and I was fighting the brother of that pastor creature guy, whatever he is. It crashed then, and it crashed one time during Minerva's Den, but that was it, just three times. So,
the architecture pimp.
Yeah.
Because he ran a whorehouse, but, you know, him and his brother built Rapture, so.
Yeah, like, he was, like, shooting at a sentry turret, and not facing me, so I, like, went up behind him with a drill, and I just, like, started going at him, and then, like, the game just, like, freezes. I was, like, it was good. But I also had some like
crazy. This game's so old, and has been remastered, and it still has these issues.
Yeah, I had some missing textures too, but not like really bad. It was like the very last level in like one of those airlocks. The textures were like they didn't load in, so it's blurry.
Was this an was this an Unreal game?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that seems to be like a common thing that happens sometimes with Unreal games, like where it's like you just go into an area and textures don't load in, or they load in like really late. It's a weird thing that they have with Unreal 3.
Yeah, like they did load in and then they disappeared again. And they came back, so like...
Awesome.
But other than that, it's just like some weird physics glitches. Like you would see sometimes enemies like they would fall in a weird way and then like bounce across the room or something. But nothing like game breaking.
Standard ragdoll, right? Like flipping all over the place.
Pretty much, yeah.
I feel like that's a fun glitch, though. I mean, unless you're trying to like, grab something off the body, then you're just like.
It did have
stop like, moving. Too.
So I'm curious. Do you get more Adam like long term if you harvest the little sisters, or is it like basically the same? Because if you rescue the little sisters, they'll give you the teddy bear with Adam in it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure. I've never actually compared the two. But yeah, I always had quite a bit of Adam after harvesting all of them. So, I mean, I could go on a shopping spree after each level. But yeah, I'm not sure if it balances out.
Yeah, because I remember with the original, they kind of hyped it up, just being like, in order to survive, in order to get Adam, you're gonna have to, you're gonna have to do some something despicable, and then it turned out to be like, oh yeah, you get the same amount of Adam from rescuing them. God, you're a monster. Why would you do that?
Yeah, well, the Atlas was like insisting that they're monsters and it's not despicable. So you don't feel that guilt until later in the game when it's like, hey, he's not actually telling you the truth. But yeah.
Well, it's like, you're right. But also if you don't rescue them, they are kind of still like these creepy monsters that will eventually become big sisters. Like, it's fucked up. they're really screwy. Like, of course, Javi, you like went and harvested them all. So,
well, you gotta wonder though. Like, were they ever little girls? I think they were, right? And the slug is the atom that's inside of them.
Cause yeah. I think that's one of the audio log kind of storylines. Is there's a reporter. Or a father that goes, he's looking for his daughter.
Right.
Yeah. And she's been turned into one of these. So.
Yeah, because they're going out and like stealing girls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Because they're running out of children in Rapture, so they're just like, okay, I guess we're going to Iceland now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's never like explicitly stated, I don't think, but it's like really alluded to, like, oh, we're gonna need to start thinking about getting them from the surface. Like, it's kind of the last you hear of it, but. Yeah, that definitely seems to be what happened.
But, I mean, I guess the last level, what were you guys' thoughts on that? Because I was, like, when Sophia Lamb, like, literally started, like, smothering Eleanor, I was just like, holy shit. It was brutal.
So she, like, basically kills her to kill you and then like defribs her back.
Yeah, pretty much. I thought it would just be like a thing where like she injects something that would slow the heartbeat that would sever the connection, but she's like, no, I'm gonna take a freaking pillow and I'm gonna smother my comatose daughter. And then
honestly, when I got to that scene, I don't know. I wasn't really feeling. I don't know. Maybe this is unfair, but I was like, this game feels like it's trying to go for that really easy, like, you're the father and here's your daughter and she's calling you daddy and you gotta save her. And like, not that that wasn't happening in all the games, but I don't know, at that point it was so pointed that it was like, all right, this is like really basic, easy storytelling that's like kind of lame right at this point. I don't know.
It's the save the princess trope, essentially. Right. Like, I have to get to the end of the game so I can save Eleanor. And yeah, that would kind of, like, I would occasionally roll my eyes at that, but I think they try to explain it. They're like, yeah, we're not actually flesh and blood, but we're both like people that got very unlucky and were experimented on and kind of just, in addition to that actual physical bond, I think there's this like emotional bond, like, hey, we went through shit, but we kind of helped each other out along the way. And I don't know, I liked that element a bit more.
Sure.
Yeah. One thing I thought was kind of interesting, like kind of on that topic, like Lam is talking to you and she's like, you know, okay, you have this like drive to get Eleanor and you're like, if you're away from your little sister, you're driven to madness. So like, are you going crazy? And then like, I started thinking about that in terms of like the whole thing, the like deconstruction of the first game, like where you're the player being told what to do. Then it's like, okay, so in this game, are you the player who is like, you're being driven to go get Eleanor and you're going quote crazy because you're like killing all the splicers and potentially other people to get there? I don't know if that was intentional or not.
Yeah, there is something too, like, how much free will does your character actually have? Because you are still bonded to this girl, and like literally, like her getting smothered kills you, and like being away from her hurts Big Daddy. Being away from your little sisters hurts the Big Daddies. So like, yeah, how much of it is you're just kind of on autopilot to reunite?
Right.
Well, speaking of bonding to like the well, Eleanor in particular, but the little sisters in general, is it explained why every time you pick up one of the other little sisters that bond doesn't sort of break you when they run off at the end of it?
Like, I think I think it explains the Alpha series. Like, they're bonded to one little sister in particular, and that was a flaw of the Alpha design, and that's why later versions of the Big Daddy could bond with any little sister.
So then all the ones you pick up, you're not bonded to them, but they're bonded to you. Is that the idea there?
There's a thing... There's a thing that Ellen...
Okay, no, go ahead.
About they trust you because of something that she did, like, I can't remember what it was now, but like she did something or something happened to you that like now all the little sisters just like trust you like as their dad or whatever. So I can't remember exactly how they phrased it, but
yeah, I think it relates to her specifically, right? Like, because she's bonded to you and she trusts you, they follow her lead to some extent.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily the little sister like bonded to you, but like they see you as like, okay, you know, I can go with this guy and be fine, basically.
Yeah, I kind of assumed Eleanor was kind of, I mean, that's kind of Sophia Lamb's main plan to make her like this hive mind thing. And I just assumed the little sisters were kind of like her fingers, essentially. And she was using them to accomplish tasks around Rapture because she couldn't move her own body for like what, 10 years?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so I get where you're coming from. Maybe a little bit of suspension of disbelief, but I think she would just had a hand in everything. She was controlling everything from the onset.
Gotcha. And then there was another one in that sequence that where you are playing as a little sister. Why weren't the splicers attacking you?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Reaches for you, but like that's it.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but don't they? Little sisters can run around and not get harassed. I think maybe it's when they have Adam on them, like when they've sucked it out of someone and it's in the bottle, then they're a target. Maybe that's it.
You can totally do that, like right next to some splicers that are just like standing around those.
This oh, can you? Yeah, you're right. You're right.
I didn't know if those splicers were actually there or if they're a hallucination. I think there was actually a splicer. It's like behind a gate and it's like, hey, come over here. I'm not going to hurt you or something like that. And I assumed, oh, that's an actual splicer. So I kept away from him. Because I thought it was supposed to be a stealth section at first, so I'm just like, oh god, how am I supposed to get past all these people? And then I just walk past them, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, same.
Unless they're under the same effects of the atom, and they're just standing there thinking they're in the perfect world of Rapture.
Could be that.
But, yeah, I mean, I think that does it for the main game itself. Did before we move on to maybe just discussing a little bit of Minerva's den, did anybody want to add anything?
Yeah, I guess I just want to... Oh, go ahead.
Okay. To put a pin in where we started this, I think that BioShock 2 is generally underrated. I think that it's thought of as like the black sheep of the series. Where I think it's better than what people gave it credit for. It was really creative in how it worked within that sandbox, and it's solid. I think it's not as good as the first one. The first one's kind of iconic, but it's a nice supplemental. Like, think of it as like a giant DLC pack or like add on to the first game, and I think it's great at that. But yeah.
Marcus, you were saying something?
Yeah, I guess just I'm sort of piggybacking off of what Javi's saying. I do agree that BioShock 2 is underrated. I think it has better gameplay than BioShock 1, but the story to me is much weaker. And you know, and some of that's like on that fundamental level where yes, it's interesting that you're sort of looking at the dueling ideologies at play, but it's so hard to believe that this like populist from who's rising through the ranks and like really gaining some notoriety is not mentioned at all in the first game, so it just makes this whole game feel like a reach as a result. And then beyond that, it's like yes, the gameplay is better in BioShock 2, but it's still not good. And so I think that's why BioShock 1 it sort of stands up on top just based off of the story.
Yeah, I really like the, you know, the added areas that they put in here to Rapture, but for me, yeah, the story wasn't quite as strong. I don't know. I mean, I didn't have like the, not that there's an emotional connection to your guy from the first one, I guess, but there is that reveal, right? And I think that still hits even now. Even like knowing it, like when it first happened, like that original reveal that, like, you know, you've been controlled all this time and you kill Andrew Ryan, that was like a huge moment. You don't get that here with BioShock 2. You know, you do get the really cool like visual of, you know, what does the world look like when you're on Atom, which is really neat. But I didn't have like a connection. What was that?
If they tried to like have a moment that's like, yeah, that, it would have been very clear that they were trying, yeah, to do that.
Like, and we're just trying to hit the same notes, and
right.
And instead, they just give you like more cool stuff to explore, and that works. It's fine. And I think you do have a little bit more options, like as Marcus said, like the gameplay's a little bit better. It's still not great. But you're there for the atmosphere, I think. So, to me, like, exploring everything is fun. Like, I kind of agree with Javi. It is a little underrated. And it's a good game. It's just, it's more BioShock.
Yeah, I thought going in, I thought it was the black sheep of the family. So I assumed it was going to be like the same quality as Devil May Cry 2. And
oh, no.
It's a lot better. Yeah, a lot better than that.
That's a bad game, Paul.
That next guy.
But yeah, Minerva's Den. What did you guys think of that?
I liked it. As we said early on here, like it's shorter. I think I finished in like 3-4 hours or so. It tells a nice tight story. It's like a cool like look at like technology and overuse of that. It's kind of like Apple founding and the breaking up of like, you know, Steve Jobs and his other founders there. I thought that was maybe like an interesting touch that they kind of built off of, and I like where it ended up at. Like it's a decent story. I don't know if it adds a ton to the BioShock lore. It's just a good story that you play more BioShock in.
Yeah, and I mean, I kind of enjoyed watching Porter kind of work through his grief in the audio recordings.
Mm-hmm.
What was it? The main villain, Wall, or whatever. He was kind of boring. It's just like, oh, it's a generic splicer who's obsessed with this equation. But beyond that, I think it actually did put a pretty bow on the series, especially Rapture, because at the end, it's just like, basically the reason why they're going after the Thinker is they're like, okay, the Thinker will be able to allow us to develop a cure, which we can give to the remaining citizens of Rapture that are splicers. So that was kind of like the main drive of that. And that's why the Eastern European lady that's was behind the Big Daddies and Little Sisters, she's so invested in Sigma's story as well.
One thing that kind of stuck out to me, this is totally unrelated kind of, but like it sort of ties it more into like the real, I guess, the outside world more so than the other games do. Like, you know, like BioShock 1 and 2, like, when they talk about the surface world, it's like, you know, oh, it's this terrible place where everything is censored and the government, you know, controls you and takes everything from you, yada, 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 whatever, all that stuff. But like here, it's like they're talking about, you know, wanting to take the Thinker to the surface for the first place. But like also their Porter is like talking about like how he worked with Turing, who's like, you know, an actual person who existed. And it's like, oh, okay, you know, this kind of like makes it feel like more that it actually takes place in the real world versus like the other games kind of feel like, you know, they are in the real world, but it feels more like a fantasy. Like there's nothing like grounding it really. And just like the fact that they're talking about like, okay, here's all this stuff about the surface. Like it kind of like grounds it more in like, oh, this is like alternate reality, not just fantasy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only thing I'd probably add on Minerva's Den is just that it was a little bit strange the way it started. It just felt like, didn't I just play this? Like you're going into a place, you get knocked out, and then you wake up. This time they don't even bother giving you a timeline. They just say, sometime later. Here you're waking up out of your haze. But in general, you know, like we covered before, I do like the shorter length of it. The accelerated pace too, that you get the upgrades, was nice that they didn't make you really grind it out again. I thought that was a nice touch just to get you to where you needed to be. Of course, where you needed to be is facing more hordes of enemies, so it wasn't exactly a reinventing the wheel there. But in general, it was a good experience. I think I had Minerva's Den built up so much in my head. Anytime anyone talked about BioShock 2, they're like, yeah, fuck the game, but Minerva's Den. And I don't think they're all that different.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I kind of looked at Minerva's Den kind of like a Metroidvania sort of level, where it's basically like, okay, in order to get to this next area, you need a plasmid. So you go and get, you go to the Chozu's statue, you get the plasmid, and you can move on to the next area. So when I viewed it like that, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, putting it that way definitely sounds better than like the way it's in the game. Like Porter is like, another malfunctioning door. Like,
you could, it was, which to be fair was how I felt.
yeah. Like, I probably wouldn't have felt that way if like the character in the game wasn't like pointing that out.
It's just like, oh, God, I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to make you go the long way around. I don't know, like at the very last level, it was just like, oh, you're sorry. Okay. And then, yeah, the end reveal that Milton talking to you all along was the thinker. So, I mean, I guess it wasn't too much of a surprise, but it was still like, oh, okay, that's actually kind of creative. But I think playing Tacoma before this kind of spoiled me. So,
right, yeah, I wonder at the time if the narrative would have been so surprising. Because now I feel like we've seen the story so many other times. I felt like a better version of it was like in Soma, as opposed to this.
Oh, hell yeah.
Because the ideas they worked with in Soma were like, yeah, oh, this is awesome. Here it's just like, oh yeah, I mean, it's like my consciousness through the computer. It wasn't really, because they don't explore it enough as like how effective and accurate that was. I don't really know how much I believe the computer was able to replicate them.
So much of the story in BioShock comes from you having to find those audio logs. Like, you can miss like vital parts of Minerva's Den. Not vital, but like, you know, parts that give you more insight into it if you aren't picking up every audio log, and it detracts a little bit from maybe something like Soma, which does it better in general.
Yeah, I mean, Soma has like emails that you can read that give you a little bit more context of what's going on, but most of the story in Soma is unmissable, right? BioShock is kind of 50-50, or maybe a bigger divide of like whether or not you listen to the audio logs if you know what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
And speaking of the audio logs, and this is probably across the series, those feel more and more forced to the point where it's like, why are people leaving these things all over the place? Especially when they're like plotting conspiracies through audio logs. What's going on?
And they're giant. It's like, I mean, which makes sense for the time period. Like a tape player at that time would be bigger, but it's like these giant audio recordings being left all over.
Yeah, it would make more sense if there's just tapes, right? You'd be carrying one.
There's one in particular where it's Fontaine is kind of documenting like, oh god, the heat's getting up on me right now. Good thing I changed my voice and sound like this now. I'll be giving away the whole shtick that he's Atlas. It's just like, oh wow, if somebody found this, he would have been screwed. But yeah, I mean, did you guys have like a favorite area from the game?
I think you guys touched on it earlier. It's like that kind of the museum diorama section. For me, like I love that part of the game.
No, that one was pretty good. I kind of liked going to the kind of the red light. I like the red light district, mm-hmm. So to speak. That was fun. And then in the Minerva's Den DLC, there was a freezer room, and I thought that was creative because I was going around like hitting these ice sculptures because I'm like, oh, I should put these guys out of their misery. And when I discovered that some of them were actually kind of using that as like camouflage, I was like, oh wow, that was actually really clever. And it would also do that in the game. Like sometimes you would have a bunch of bodies on the floor and you would run past them to check something out, and then you would turn around and they would all get up.
Yeah, it plays with that horror trope of you never know what's still alive out there.
Of course, it never really worked for me because I was always looting them. So like, I was always trying to look to see if I missed something on them. And, oh, it's red.
Back it again.
No, but yeah, I think that was eventually I was just like, oh, yeah, no, I should do that, but the first couple of times it happened, it made me jump. So I don't know. It was appreciated. Like, oh, these splicers, they're not entirely mindless. At least they have some tactics going on. But before we finish up things, did you guys have any closing thoughts?
With the state of the franchise where it is now, I don't care at all about BioShock 4. and I think that BioShock, I mean, heck, I was going to say, I think that BioShock 2 wrapped things up in Rapture to where it's like, okay, I don't need to think about Rapture. But even then, they had BioShock 2, like we said, has Minerva's Den DLC, and then Infinite went back to Rapture also in its DLC and in its main game. So, like, I think we're done with Rapture. If they do another BioShock and it's like another environment, maybe that could be interesting. But I don't know. Like, I feel like this series, you know, is fine where it's at. But I guess you could say that for a lot of games.
BioShock in space.
Yeah, like, I was just about to say that. It's on the moon.
BioShock X.
Which would really just be Rapture again, but
well, that's what System Shock is. It's a BioShock in space, yeah. Essentially, right?
Yeah, I think so.
They could like put it like in the center of the Earth or something. BioShock in Hell.
That's just Doom.
Yeah.
Oh, but then it would play better.
Oh,
I'm fighting words.
Just truth.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's our next game, Paul?
I had brought up some titles earlier, so I can go. Choose from maybe one of those, or if you guys have any suggestions, I'm all ears.
I wish we could all play Soma for the first time and then do this.
I haven't played Soma yet, but that would just be me.
I haven't played
Soma either. I mean, I'm usually not a big fan of horror games, but I'd be willing to check it out. But I don't know if it would be as enjoyable for somebody who's already played it without the twists and turns.
Yeah. Oh, man. That was like an unforgettable... Like, video game narratives don't usually impress me, but Soma really nailed it. Yeah, okay.
Let's see. How do you guys feel about Brutal Legend?
Oh, no. I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't play the first hour. I've tried to play Brutal Legend. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've gone, okay, I'm going to play Brutal Legend. This time it's going to stick. And, like, I get to, like, the first RTS part of it, and I'm like, I don't want to do that. And I just never play it again. And that's happened, like, 8 times. So, no, I forfeit on that one.
As somebody that's finished Brutal Legend, you're not missing anything, Javi.
That's too bad.
I haven't played that game since it launched back in what? It was like 2008?
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, so I mean, and then, you know, I don't. Has everybody here played Pyre?
I have not. Did it ever make it to consoles? Because I remember it was a PC game, and I'm like, well,
PS4. I played it on PS4. So,
oh, sick.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's
so,
a super giant, right?
Mm-hmm. Super giant, and the gameplay is reminiscent of NBA Jam, but has a ton of RPG and story elements thrown in.
It's a crazy game, Javi.
That sounds awesome. Holy crap.
What do you guys think about that? Pyre be cool for everybody else?
Sure, because it's like one of the super giant games I've skipped. So,
yeah, I played Bastion and Transistor, but I haven't played Pyre, so that'd be good.
Yeah, I'm down.
Yep.
All right, then I guess it's Pyre. So, yeah, what would 6 weeks from now be? It would be
early May.
Just in time for Resident Evil 8.
That's the end of April, right, for Resident Evil 8? Or is that beginning of June?
I thought it was May 3rd. Maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm wrong.
I think it is May. I don't remember what day that.
But,
Seventh. Yeah, that makes more sense.
Let's see.
Yeah, I mean, that timing works for me. In general, middle of the month is where I'm out.
Okay, so yeah, if that's the case, maybe try to aim to have it done by May 1st, and then we can talk about it maybe on the 7th, the 8th, or the 9th.
Sounds good.
Yep, that should be fine.
All right.
And I don't know who's going to be listening to this, but if you are listening to this, thank you for joining us. And yeah, we'll see you here in another 6 weeks. And yeah, this is Daxter23Jack signing off, and it's been a pleasure.